Hour two underway here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. JR Simmer, Hammer with you. A little wet right now for the next couple hours. Hopefully that'll be the end of it, and it will dry out a little bit the rest of the day. Cloudy. Tomorrow, beauty. Sunny. 13 tomorrow, and then on Sunday, cloudy and 14. There's your weekend outlook. Hopefully you're able to get outside, get some fresh air. Very important in these times. Get outside, get some exercise, get some fresh air. Enjoy Mother Nature a little bit because, well, you know what's coming. People in Calgary saw some snow last weekend. So I'm going to break this breaking news, this just in. It's going to snow in Ottawa at some point. That's our breaking news this morning from our breaking news desk. Which I can also tell you does have some news from the National Football League. And as always, when you get breaking news from the National Football League early in the morning, it's usually Adam Schefter from ESPN, and it's usually, well, this season in particular, something to do with COVID.
And I miss the old days when it was a DUI.
Yeah.
Like, I really miss somebody being arrested overnight.
a statement from the Indianapolis Colts saying that several individuals within their organization have tested positive for COVID-19. The team is currently in the process of confirming the tests. In the meantime, they have shut their facility for the day-to-day while they try to firm up those various positive tests. And so we will find out what that all means in terms of implications for the Colts. They have a game this weekend at home versus the Cincinnati Bengals. Of course, similar circumstance yesterday, right, with the Atlanta Falcons as well. They closed their facility after, I think it ended up being four positive tests. They've got a game this weekend versus Minnesota. So we'll see if there's any updates on either of those coming up.
Yeah, and got to admit, I hate the Colts since they left Baltimore. And the simple fact is I scanned through it. I don't have any of them on my fantasy team or my bench, so I really don't care.
And yeah,
they might be, and again, I have some fun with sports and especially baseball different. I don't know anybody on the Colts team. there's certain rosters.
And, okay, I'm going to break news to you. Yeah. Andrew Luck doesn't play for them
anymore.
No, I know.
I know, but I know Rivers came over and he's been terrible, but like to the time when obviously Manning was there and they had all the receivers and you know you had the great rivalry with the Patriots. It's
for a while T.Y. Hilton was a very good receiver. He's had a lot of injuries and not quite the player he used to be, but I agree with it. It's a pretty anonymous team now, but a pretty good team. I mean, I love Frank Reich. He won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. He's a very good coach. But
funny how, and we say that with goaltenders in hockey become the broadcasters, boy, we're seeing a real trend here of kind of secondary quarterbacks. And I know Jason Garrett wasn't great with Dallas, but quite a few of those guys transitioned to be pretty good head coaches.
Absolutely.
Which makes sense. You're basically an extension of the coaching staff when you're a long-term backup, right?
They have bent the rules so much in favor of offense, and analytics would tell you how you win in football now is by passing the football. You have to be able to pass the football to win the game, and it's just in. That's what quarterbacks do, whether they're actually playing or backups, and sometimes the guys are backups. It's talent or the guy in front of him. It's not necessarily you don't have the brain for it. Yeah. And as you said, with whether it be goalies kind of seeing the seeing that, but in football or catchers in baseball, see a lot of catchers turn into managers.
Not
like
true.
Your ability to strategize the game as a quarterback, that's why I think we're seeing a lot of them that as either coaches or offensive coordinators.
Yeah, and I just love progressive thinking, the National Football League, when they implemented the forward pass. I mean, I think that really, really
upped. You were alive back then, right?
Yes. I thought that really upped the entertainment value of
the
sport.
Keep the wrenches coming on the Wrench Throwing Friday. Simmer, you're taking one from Lou, who says, wrench to Simmer for any Houston Astros sympathy.
That's a double D on.
And writes by Bordalo to the Houston Cheaters. The entire league is tainted. That's from Lou as well. Oh, by the way, back-to-back Lou's.
Right by Bordalo.
You were saying that now that Houston has rallied, you're actually feeling like you're actually feeling a little soft spot.
No, I'm not. I have not watched any of the baseball. I'm not even. I don't even know if I have any feeling. I'm numb. But I do feel like in that case, I really going back here, and I've said that I don't understand why that wasn't taken away from them. When I look at the Olympic Games, and you know, again, when you have organized cheating at that level, it's not one guy testing positive for steroids. I just don't know how you take that world championship seriously. That should have been flat out taken away from them.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to think more about that. I certainly think that the suspension should have reached into the player level as well. I understand that the manager, and he obviously paid for it. The general manager paid for it. The club did in terms of fines and loss of draft picks. The players were in on this, and the players benefited from this. And I don't care whether, you know, how do you specify which player should take the brunt of it?
I don't care. You got to make an example of some players because I just don't think it reaches far enough when it doesn't reach into the individual players.
And even to what happened with the Clippers, and I'm on board, but how they were able as the league to move so quickly to remove ownership from Donald Sterling. Like, I know it was a $2 billion it sold for, so it wasn't like it was cheap. Organized cheating within a sport itself usually goes from a gambling aspect and is your biggest fear, and it's been in baseball, and it goes back to all the rules that they've implemented to, you know, from Pete Rose's standpoint, honestly, like when it's this organized, and first of all, at some point it's going to come out, JR, right? Like you don't do this with a team and at some point an employer, a player, and this is a former player, right, that originally got kind of the ball rolling.
Pitcher who's in Oakland now.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. And like I said, it really is. That compromises at every level what you're trying to make sure doesn't happen as a sport, and especially in the case of baseball. They have always been, and that's all the logic that they've always used with all the steroid guys, along with Pete Rose.
All right. So the Astros won in a walk-off last night by Carlos Correa. So they're now down 3-2 with Game 6 going tonight. And the Braves demoed Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers. So they're up 3-1. Atlanta, a win away from their first World Series in 21 years. They used to, not necessarily get to the World Series every year, but they were a perennial playoff winner. Yeah, absolutely. But the Braves haven't been there in a while. So we'll find out. That is the later game tonight, 9 o'clock. On that. So, all right, 7:18. Let's take care of some business, shall we? We had Chris and Bruce, Scotty, Jeff, and Jolene were our five qualifiers yesterday in our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest. This is our daily prize of a $100 gift certificate to Gabriel's. I have randomly assigned those five people numbers between 20 and 24.
Oh.
No, 1 and 5.
Okay.
Simmer, you pick, you give me a number. Yeah. I will tell you the name associated with
that. One of my favorite recent songs is Hannah Montana doing Jolene. I want Jolene to win, and I'm guessing Jolene is number 2.
Oh, Jolene is number 2.
Nice.
What a chance. Wow, you should buy a lottery ticket.
Oh, I should.
Holy cow. Well done on you, Simmer.
So have you seen that version by Hannah Montana doing Jolene?
It's Miley Cyrus. It's not Hannah Montana.
Well, okay.
Her name is Miley Cyrus.
That's why I was a little confused, because Hannah Montana is 20 years ago.
I know. But
Wrecking Ball.
She does a hell of a Jolene. Hey, Hammer, have you heard that?
I have not heard that.
Are you serious?
But maybe you'll hear it later on this morning.
Oh, no. Her version
of it. Jolene.
That one? Oh, yeah. Classic Dolly Parton, right?
Yep. All right. So, Jolene, congratulations. You have won a $100 gift card courtesy of Gabriel Pizza. So, congratulations on that. And all five of you are into the grand prize draw. A pizza for a year from Gabriel Pizza. And we're going to run this contest for a little bit longer, but I'll say that there's more racetrack behind us than ahead of us. So if you haven't qualified yet for pizza for a year, stand by. Five chances for you to qualify coming up today, including twice with us between now and at 10 o'clock. A little bit later on in the show, we'll talk to Pierre McGuire, as always, and we'll delve more into the Dadonov signing by Ottawa. You'll get more into that in just a second. And then after 9, we're going to talk some minor hockey. We have seen more minor hockey close across Ottawa, given the restrictions that have been put in place. Nepean Minor Hockey, Cumberland Minor Hockey, both announcing yesterday that they were suspending hockey activities for the next 28 days. We'll get the very latest on that. And by the way, that's happening in Gatineau as well, and some girls hockey, all affected by this. But Gary Hopkins, who is the president of HEO, Hockey Eastern Ontario, will join us, and we'll get an update on where we're at and maybe where we're going with minor hockey, because as much as people love the NHL, if you were to ask any and this is minor sports in general, what do you enjoy more? Do you enjoy watching the pros, or do you enjoy watching your kid? 10 times out of 10, you enjoy watching your kid more.
For sure,
so to have that, again, looks like it's going to be taken away. That is unfortunate. So we'll get an update on that.
You only enjoy it, though, if the coach is deploying them properly.
Yes. As you've told them and emailed them every day.
The right line mates, they're utilizing.
You could just get Jimmy playing with the superstar kid. I'm telling you, he'd fill the net.
Well, even the opportunity in the lobby to talk to the other kids' parents and talk how they'd be really good line mates.
You know what?
Together.
We should go together to the other team on the other side of town.
Exactly.
You know, fake address. We'll be all set.
Let's pretend we both moved.
Yeah.
And funny from Sens perspective, JR, where it was, hey, not going to end up having any Russian players. I mean, you could have a quarter of your roster this year, right?
So we got Artie Party. Yep. We got Zaitsev.
Yep.
We got maybe the
Zubinator.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got Dadonov now, obviously.
Yeah.
Yep.
And who is his counterpart from Chelyabinsk?
I know I'm gapping on the obvious.
Abramoff.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And who is the most famous Sen to ever come from Chelyabinsk?
Yashin?
Nope. Dash for Cash? I think the Cash is, he's a Moscow boy. No, it was Sergei Gonchar.
Okay.
Went to watch Gonch play there back in the day. Very close to the Ural Mountains, a nice little hotel bar with a strip club right inside of it. Not a bad place to do scouting.
So was your gaze north or south? Actually, I'm going to take that back. Yeah. That comes out of that, well, it is. It's an interesting byproduct of the Dadonov signing is the fact that for a while there, the Senators... Oh, yeah. Especially when Brian Murray was running the team, but it was under Eugene Melnyk's watch, they would not come within a mile of a Russian hockey player.
No.
And now, as you said, there's the potential that, at least three and maybe as many as five players on next year's team are going to be Russian.
Yeah. And hey, I have no problem with it. This theory or this thought, and there was a trend I understood at a time when the KHL was very strong, guys wanting to go back, what would end up happening with them. But when you looked at St. Louis and that flip of picks that Ottawa did back in the day, where they took Tarasenko with the pick, you look at Panarin, who was a free player, what he's turned into, hey, like anybody, do your homework. And also for the KHL, I think there's been a shift, first of all, in Russia, what you can make. But I just think with more and more guys from Malkin and Ovechkin winning the Stanley Cup, JR, there's just more and more Russian kids. They're waking up dreaming of playing in the National Hockey League and trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Lowly Ron has texted in at 12-1200. Love the Dadonov signing. All we need to do now is steal the Who's Your Daddy chant from the Yankees. That comes from Ron. I suggested that yesterday as well.
You could even understand if it's a two- or a three-run game.
There you go. That was, of course, for Pedro Martinez, who at one point said, I don't even remember the saying, right? But he basically said,
the Yankees are my daddy.
Yeah. But also, and this one right here, Hammer, were you on the Red Sox?
Or I'm the Yankees' daddy.
But were you on the Red Sox bandwagon in 04?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you remember do you remember what point that was that they're chanting that? That's when they brought him out of the freaking bullpen
right.
in Game 7.
The Red Sox had the huge lead.
And they had a 60-run lead, and you still thought, now we're in trouble, right?
8-1.
As soon as he walked out, you're like, what? And I think it's Tim McCarver saying that right there, because they had lit him up. Didn't they score a couple of runs?
Yeah.
And got him out there as quick as he could. That was like, come on, man. If you're a Red Sox fan at that time, you're like, what are you doing?
So that's got to be a chant that goes through the CTC once old Dadonov starts lighting the lamp next season.
Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Oh, I think we get the T-shirts going too. Yeah.
Hey? Well, I would say that they would.
Who's your dadding off? Hey,
yeah, they would have got that going in Florida, but there's just not enough fans there too. Now, mind you, there'll be 6,000 socially distanced fans in Ottawa. So, but still, listen, anything fun. But in all seriousness, getting to the signing, I think it took everybody. It shocked everybody the Sens signed him, first of all, that they signed him, because there's been more guys leaving than coming. And signed, for the most part, have been fringe NHLers. When was the last impactful free agent signing that the Ottawa Senators made?
Clark MacArthur.
Yeah, which was 2000. That was, by the way, that was the same day that Daniel Alfredson left and Bobby Ryan was traded for, correct? Was that not all the same day? 2013?
Yeah, I think you're right, but I was only trying to think of the Clark MacArthur, he played the 2 years and then signed the contract extension before his final year and then really never played much other than coming back, but I think it was. But what was also interesting about Clark MacArthur, JR, he wasn't trending in the right direction when they made the signing, right? It was more of, wow, like that was, if you go back, he had some pretty good years there, but it was like, okay, let's give this, I think it was 3 years, $6 million for Clark MacArthur. Turned out to be a hell of a signing for them. Mm-hmm. But you're right. And this gets into, okay, different world, but it also for Canadian teams and a team like Ottawa, it's a simple fact that the player has chosen to come here. And I don't know what the other offers were, but I'm going to guess that at 3 years and this kind of money that there might have been options. So that's the trend you're looking at. The fact that Matt Murray, in making a trade, decides on not doing it for 1 year, signs up for 4 years. I mean, those are trends that as a fan and as a team, that's real important. And also, and I don't think Dadonov has Milstein, the agent. And if he does,
no, he doesn't.
That's the biggest pipeline, is just relationships with different people that weren't there for Ottawa before. So, hey, all of these things make, you have to wake up and say, wow, this is pretty positive what's happened with the Ottawa Senators.
Last 3 years, so he played mostly in the minors after being drafted in 07 for Florida, did get cups of coffee in three separate years, played another full year in the American Hockey League, and then went back to Russia for 5 years, including the last 3 years in St. Petersburg, and all of a sudden he starts to fill the net and Not sure what happened, whether he said, you know what, I want to give the NHL a try again, whether Florida said, geez, we got to get this guy back here. Whatever, it was the right decision because his 3 years down in Florida, 28, 28, and 25 goals this year, which had they not paused the season, would have prorated, would have been around 30. So he has been a consistent, you know, 25 to 30 goal guy for each of the last three seasons. On listen, he's playing with Barkov and Huberto. Those are one or the other or both. Those are good. Those are real good players.
Yeah.
So, you know, do those types of players exist right now in Ottawa? We'll see. But I think the important thing is he shows the ability to put the puck in the net, which is what Ottawa sorely needs.
Well, he also can make plays. No, and again, factor. I mean, we're talking about two world-class talents, but I still don't look at him and say, hey, he's a complimentary part. Does Ottawa have a Barkov or that? Well, I mean, maybe Brady Tkachuk down low when you look at a power play, what you could have. So, no, he fits in good. And as far as where he is trending, the 07 or 08, which one was the meltdown for Canada at the World Junior?
With Dave Cameron?
Dave Cameron.
Oh, no, it was 2010.
Oh, it's that far along.
Yeah. By the way, Dad not played in the 09 World Juniors here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Scored 7 points in seven games.
Yeah, on some pretty good World Junior teams. But also for when he went back to Russia, would have been, hey, two-way contracts, not making a whole lot of cash. Cash would have dried up a little bit in Russia, but I'm sure Florida, and I probably would have been the timing of Dale Tallon coming back, probably said, hey, let's get this guy back here. Dale would have known him from when he was drafted. He hops back in, and hey, he's been a real nice player so far. And like I said, not a lot of miles, not a guy at 31 you look at and worry about that. This guy's still got lots of good hockey in him.
5'11", 185. He's a left shot, but prefers or has played the right wing, so plays his off wing. And if you kind of look at the Senators' depth chart right now as far as how it looks like it'll line up at right wing for the coming season, you got Dadonov now, I guess, is your number one guy. You hope that Drake Batherson fills that hole at number two. And if not, you got Connor Brown right now, and we'll get to the implications of what this might mean in terms of Connor Brown in just a second. And then you got Austin Watson. So that right side, if Brown is back next season, that's a very decent right wing compared to what they've had here in Ottawa for many years.
Yeah, and Tkachuk.
Used to be a strength, right? Think back to Alfie and Hossa and Havlat, and like right wing was unbelievable for the Sens for a lot of years, and then it went completely dry, and now they're just starting to get it back again.
Yeah, and even a left side, I think Formanton plays, mix in Stutzla to Tkachuk, and you end up having basically Paul as a fourth-line guy. Now all the real question marks are a center. I have it right now. I'd go Tierney, Norris, Logan Brown, White, and old Artie Party in the five slot, but hey, you start to look at that, and the combination of Murray and Hogberg in goal, and on paper, I think you get really excited. Now, question mark is, realistically, where is the defense at? And when Pierre Dorion says maybe he's not done, you got to be looking at that and thinking, if I want to go out and make some more noise, got to try to improve the right side of that D. But how realistic is that? I can't think of any free agents and what else is available out there. And maybe they do this on a Friday after hours. I kind of feel like a Sergachev offer sheet might be coming. I think they're putting that back. I think Mac T's in the office right now with Dorion's out digging, and Mac T's in there putting together a little offer sheet for Sergachev.
I have a list here, and you know that somebody put together of the remaining free agent, top free agent defensemen that are left. There's five names here.
Is there a right shot D that maybe played in Ottawa before?
Are three former Ottawa Senators of the five that are left.
Okay.
One being Zdeno Chara. Ooh. No chance he's coming back. Then old Hainsey, Ron Hainsey, and one Mr. CC is there as well.
Do you think Char would ever come back?
Well, you know what? I know he really liked. He liked living in Ottawa because he lived next door to my sister. Listen, he's a terrific. He'd be awesome to come back, and I understand that. Look, he's long in the tooth, but everything he brings to the table would be perfect.
I would immediately dismiss it,
and then I go, well, I'd never say never.
Well, Boston doesn't appear that they want to re-sign him, and the guy said, well, he still wants to play. I would look at that. I mean, would that shock you?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it would shock me.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't it shock you?
Apparently not. I just for where Ottawa's at and the fact that he played here before, if Boston doesn't want him, you know, my guess if I'm Char, I want to go to a team that I can win a cup. You kind of look at where this is trending. Now I don't think he also fits for Ottawa because I don't think defensively he's at a point as well where he actually needs help now. I don't think you could slide him in and play him with a guy like Shabbat. So yeah. I don't think so. I'm just saying is that, you know, if that came down that they were doing that, would I be completely shocked? No, I wouldn't at this point.
I love everything that Zdeno Chara brings to the table, but I would love that if I was a team that was close to winning the Stanley Cup.
I agree with you. He'd be basically like Shen Shen and Bogosian, right? Where, you know, you bring in those guys and they're playing as a 5-6-7 or even a coach that wants to do that. So, no, I agree with that. Now, he would also be tremendous as a mentor, but I don't think that's a fit for Ottawa.
The two right-shot defensemen that are still out there that are the top of the what's left over list in terms of defense are Sammy Vatanen and Travis Hamonic, two completely different players. Vatanen is more of an offensive guy, and Hamonic is more of a shot blocker.
Yeah, how would you like Hamonic with Shabbat? I know you know him a little better. I haven't watched him with the Flames.
You know what? I thought his play really fell off the last couple of years. So
has he been one of the more overrated players the last 7 or 8 years?
You know what? I thought he was a really solid player with the Islanders. First year in Calgary, it was kind of like, he's just a steady Eddie, solid player.
Yeah.
But I think he just looks like there's a lot of hard miles on him.
Okay.
You know, and he's got such a terrific backstory. You know, I still remember that ESPN documentary about the work he did with the Islanders. It's terrific. Sammy Vatanen, you want to talk about a puck mover.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the demands are too high or what's going on, but he's been passed around the NHL a little bit.
Another guy that I don't feel like he ever really matched up to any of the, like, Olli Maatta. No, he's better. Never felt like he maxed his potential.
Yeah, just back to your point, though, and it's an interesting one of, hey, look, you know, the Sens have now, if that's the end of it, kind of rounded out the forwards for the here and now while they wait for more of their prospects to come. It's like, okay, you know, you can see there's some NHL quality there. And you know, getting Matt Murray, you know, if his game kind of rebounds a little bit and Hogberg or whatever, it's okay. You can see that. And you know, what you said about right now, the defense is not set up to succeed. Like, it doesn't match where the forwards and the goalies are at. And I get that 100%. The curiosity to me is okay, you got all these guys that are in the pipeline, right? Lassie Thompson's coming over. Well, he'll be in Belleville. You got Sanderson and JBD are at North Dakota. And we had Brad Berry, the coach of North Dakota, on. And he's seeing all these guys at practice. And we, you know, Sanderson, it's like, look, he's not going to be ready to play in the NHL next season. Brad Berry, he's not saying that because, hey, Sens, leave him here. He's saying that as a guy who played in the NHL, a guy who's had top quality players go through his school program. And he said, look, the guy's going to be an awesome NHL player, in my opinion, but he's not ready to play in the NHL next season. So I guess my curiosity in all of this is, and you mentioned this in the first hour, I can't see, you know, there's a lot of excitement about, you know, these defensive prospects they've got. First of all, to a certain extent, they're all the same kind of player.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of sandpaper to any of these players that we're talking about. Maybe a bit to Sanderson from what I understand. So I'm not sure if the mix is right. But to expect that, and we add Branstrom to the list, to add all four of those guys suddenly are going to play in the NHL, and, oh, there's your defensive core, that ain't happening.
No, and it, first of all, foolish on a few levels to think all of them are going to make it. I don't even know Lassie Thompson well enough. Branstrom is a player as to where he slides in, but everybody keeps putting these depth charts together that have basically those two with Willannon and Shabbat, mix in JBD and Sanderson. Well, first of all, JR, as we know, that never happens. The transition, first of all, the chances of all six making it, but to transition without veteran help. And this is where I look at, and I'll throw this as far as a combo. Like, if I was rolling this crew through right now and I had my choice of, I would go a Tanev-style contractor player at 4.5, a DeMello at 3, and Borrow at 2. That would how I'd be my 9.5 versus the crew they put together. Then I'll immerse my players, and hey, if at whatever point that your young players pass by your veteran players, that's fine. But trying to find your way into the National Hockey League, and let's deal with the here and now. I got Thomas Chabot, and last year was a throwaway year. He played, Smitty throws him out for 35 minutes a night. He didn't improve last year. He, you know, and I didn't expect the numbers to be there because I didn't have a great power play. But he became a one-speed defenseman, made a lot of mistakes. You don't have anybody to play with him right now to protect your $64 million investment. And to me, that's very short-sighted. And I don't want to say it's philosophical with Pierre Dorion since he's been in Ottawa. But the defensive pairings and the defensive core outside of Mark Methot and Erik Karlsson, for the last 10 years, that's been a disaster for the Ottawa Senators. They, for whatever reason, have not been able to identify and put together proper pairings, or at the same time, who have they really developed, guys, outside of Erik Karlsson and now Shabbat? Like, they've had a really tough time for whatever reason on the back end.
Yeah. So, again, that's going to be interesting to see how it plays itself out. If they do go out and either sign one of these guys I just mentioned, or maybe there's somebody else, or they make a trade for a defenseman, you know, that remains to be seen on all of that. And what does that say too? Because, you know, you'd look at right now and you go, okay, well, first of all, there's going to be injuries. So, but there's Erik Branstrom, your kind of number one guy that starts in Belleville that eventually gets called up.
Yeah.
That improbability. Well, if you bring in a veteran, does that push him down? What does that say about what you think of Eric Brandstrom at this stage? That's a curiosity to me. And the other part I want to bring up, and this is the only downside, I think, to the Dadnoff thing, and my spidey senses are tingling a little bit since I heard about this yesterday. I think the Dadnoff thing is a great signing. It's great money. It's great term. It checks all the boxes. But I'm just wondering if this is all being done at this point because they have taken the money that they were going to have to pay Connor Brown. Not that he was going to make $5 million, say $3.5 to $4 million, whatever, in a longer-term contract, if they've already said, look, we're not going to be able to come to a deal, and he's going to get shipped out, and you have said many times there was zero reason to make that. The Zaitsev for CC trade is a terrible trade for Ottawa, but Connor Brown saves it a little bit. But if you're getting rid of Connor Brown, then you got four more years of Zaitsev at the money he's making, and Cody Ceci, meanwhile, is off the books for Toronto. That does not make sense. So that's the one little niggly thing in the back of my mind right now.
And I agree with you. And also, I really don't know where Pierre Dorion was going down this path of Dadanov is quiet, but he's a leader. He's a good hockey player, whatever. You've done your homework on. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And as you start to ship out more of the Borowieckis and the Connor Browns and guys coming in, and you bring in, and hey, this guy maybe he's Igor Larionov. I don't know, but I totally agree with what you're saying there. That felt a little forced when he went down that path talking about the leadership component.
Yeah, and listen, the thing, and people are going, oh, come on, Connor Brown's not Dadanov. No, he's not. He's a totally different type of player. But you need, if you're building this team to try to get to a playoff level and then start to win playoff rounds, and Eugene Melnyk is to be believed, win a Stanley Cup within 4 years. The Connor Browns of the world are the types of players that you round your team out with. And often you have to go out and acquire in trades and make deadline deals where you give up a lot for those types of glue players.
Yeah.
Well, you've got him in-house.
Yeah, no,
got
I
chance
agree.
To, and I'm not, by the way, it sounds like I'm on the Connor Brown for Prime Minister bandwagon here. Yeah. I just think, I watched him play last year. God, I wish he could finish more of his chances, but boy, he is just a perfect hockey player to have on a really good hockey team. You got him. I'm very concerned that this is all a prelude to him being shipped out.
Yeah, and I'll also say from the Sen side, I'm friends with the agent Jeff Jackson. If he also, times have changed. I mean, if he's asking for 5 years and he wants close to $5 million, well, you know what? Unfortunately, we're not going to pay you. So I also understand that. I have no idea where the negotiations are at. And I think in arbitration, he gets a decent number because they don't care about COVID. So I understand that. What I would do at this point, though, and I would hope from an Ottawa perspective, I would go to arbitration with both Tierney and Brown, and I would bring Brown back on a one-year deal versus shipping him out, JR, only in the hope that as the dust settles that I could end up doing something. That would be much better than just saying, you know what, this isn't going to work, and you end up flipping him out right now.
All right, thoughts on any of that? Always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll get the thoughts of what this all means and the thoughts on Evgeny Dadanov from Pierre McGuire when he joins us after 8 as we roll on here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Yeah.
Would Dolly Parton have said those lyrics, or was that some ad lib by Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, that appeared to be Miley.
Some creative
little improv action going there.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Speaking of pizza, as we move quickly along, congrats, Jeremy, lucky caller number 18. Jeremy, you are now in to win our daily prize. We'll award on Monday in our Pizza for a Year contest with Gabriel Pizza. We'll do it 4 more times today, including once with us between now and 10 o'clock. And you got a chance again on In the Box between 10 and 2 and twice more in the drive with Ian and Lee. All right. More on the Dadanov. And by the way, I think there's something wrong with our texting machine. I know there's a bunch of people that want to weigh in on what we went through in the last segment. So keep those coming. I think everything's stuck in our inbox. So we'll get that fixed up.
Yeah, and I just said texted out or tweeted out. I have been in direct contact with His Excellency, the Russian ambassador to Canada.
Is that like Excellency?
Yeah,
same thing.
Yep. So and so I've talked to him quite a bit since the Askarov, and I got to admit, he's extremely excited. He even talked about, and you have to, when in Russia, when you talk about somebody very important, you have to say their first name twice. So if I'm going to say Vladimir Putin, I've got to see Vladimir Putin. And
why do I do that?
Well, I don't know, but that's just what they do. When I was living there, they would say that, and it was showing respect to the person, but a possibility that Vladdy might be in town to drop the puck for opening night is what he's pushed along.
With all the Russians on the Sens.
Also, they're expanding the embassy just in case they want to house any of the comrades that are now on the Sens. After the big Ruski out in Cape Breton got drafted, and now you got these five guys. guys here we're talking about, we could see, down the road here, we could see 50% of the team. So His Excellency is very excited.
That would be Igor Sokolov, right?
Yeah.
The Russian kid they signed. That was a really nice piece of video that came out. Boy, and you have talked a lot about how a lot of these kids that come over from Russia to play junior hockey come from very, very disadvantaged backgrounds, right? Yeah. Coming over here, you talk about chasing the dream of all Canadians.
Yeah.
Kids come over here to play junior hockey. This is a guy that went through the draft twice, put up real nice numbers in an overage year for a Cape Breton team last year. And ends up getting drafted at the end of the second round by the Sens. It was a really nice piece of video with his billet, and dreams come true.
Yeah, he had the big old pink suit going, which I love that, but it really is, JR, and so much more respectful now. But this trend started when I was playing junior hockey in the 80s. These European kids coming over, and they don't have the language skills, and played with guys in the pros as well. You just didn't understand it, right? They come over. I mean, they need help. They don't need people putting them down, which is really what happened a lot of times. And how many guys, but they come over, they don't have much money. You got to get in with the right organization, the right billet family. And to make it really is, and we talk about with, different sports in the U.S., kids coming out of the inner city or in baseball, from Latin America, a lot of these kids and a lot of places in Russia is a third world country. And it's a lot of work for a lot of people and to transition over. And when you finally do make it, are you getting the right spot here? Are you getting the right support? To me, I love it. I love to see stories like that. And I think a lot of people are pulling for him.
All right. More on the Dadonov signing and what it might mean for the Sens going forward with Pierre McGuire coming up in about 15 minutes or so. I wanted to look at one thing that happened. I have favorite sound bites from over the years in sports, and we see the TSN top 10 lists, and this is one that comes up all the time in terms of famous coach sound bites. On this day in 2006, 14 years ago today, the Arizona Cardinals have blown a 23-3 lead to the Chicago Bears. So, Coach Denny Green, what happened?
The Bears are what we thought they were. What we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bull? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
And we didn't leave it running long. The best part of that is there's about 5 minutes, 5 seconds of silence because I'm sure everybody is stunned by this reaction. And then the media relations guy is standing there and he goes, thanks, Coach.
Yeah. No, and you're right. And for any – and Denny Green was a real nice player in the NFL, was he not?
I don't remember.
Oh, he looks like he was. Let's go with it. Okay. But my point is that that's the only thing I know him of. As soon as you said the clip, it's amazing how you can place the person, right?
Yeah.
And you have the famous one from the old Seahawks coach, right? With the playoffs. Like that was a different one.
Well, the Saints, Jim Mora.
And Mike Singletary had a bit of a meltdown, didn't he? With the with the 49ers.
Yes. Can't coach him. Can't win with him. That one. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've been the classic ones.
And I think Mike Singletary probably fits into your classic case. First of all, not really sure about his coaching IQ, but some of these guys that were such great players, and I'm assuming for him, so much of it comes so naturally, and especially for linebackers, probably a total misunderstanding as to why everybody can't play like him.
Yes, exactly. Hey,
that is when we talk about star players trying to coach other athletes, that's what it always comes down to, is just understanding. Yeah. I've told you a bunch of stuff. Why are you not doing what I used to do I played?
Kind of like Wayne Gretzky as a coach in Phoenix, right? Yeah. It's kind of like, well, of course, what you would do right there is you would skate to the open ice behind the net. You had the defenseman would fall all over themselves. Yeah. You'd throw it in front of the guy who's wide open. He'd score. Of course you do that. Yeah. Why are you doing that?
And you be Gretzky and Curry's going to come in and we got Coffey and Messi and Anderson and everybody else. Also, I think for Wayne Gretzky at the end of the day, Jar, if you really want to look back to that, he was making $6 million and the new ownership came in and said, listen, you're going to have a job now. That's what it really came down to, right? Yeah. They say, I'm not paying you. And he said, okay, I'll go behind the bench.
All right. So that happened on this day in 2006. That is one of my favorite all-time coach sound bites. On this day, this would be the anniversary of this would be on Sunday, but in 1992, the Blue Jays have turned the corner. They have finally made the World Series, but they lose game one down in Atlanta, and they are down in game two when this happens.
Well hit to left field. To the wall, Deion Sanders. Home run, Ed Sprague.
off the bench with a pinch hit two-run homer off Jeff Reardon to give the Toronto Blue Jays a 5-4 lead.
There you go. And that turned that series around, quite frankly. I think if the Blue Jays end up losing that game, I think they end up losing the series. So Ed Sprague coming off the bench with a pinch hit home run off former Expo Jeff Reardon of the Atlanta Braves. That was also the same game, of course, where the Canadian flag during the anthem was hung upside down by mistake, we think, by the honor guard, the U.S. honor guard down there. Yeah. And, of course, all the kerfuffle about that. Yeah. I was actually in the stands for Game 3 in Toronto when the World Series returned for that. And I just remember how huge a story that was at the time. And when I say in the stands, I literally was in the last row of the outfield at Sky Dome.
But you're still there. And to the Americans as well. And like they could care less, right? Like really? Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't know. It's upside down?
But they don't even. They wouldn't even register.
You mean the pointy part doesn't go goes up?
Wouldn't even factor in. And funny with Jeff Reardon, first of all, I said obviously some real tough times recently and some of the reports there of some mental health issues. Still remember him when I was on the Expos bandwagon. And he came in and was in tremendous. Do you remember his wife getting booed at Olympic Stadium?
No.
Okay, that was a big part of him then leaving Montreal. But he was accepted some award, and I don't know if they had a Molson Cup, but he got something. And I just remember her coming out, and I just remember that was kind of the beginning of the end. He was not too excited about that, as he should be.
So the interesting part of Ed Sprague, who hit that huge pinch hit home run, is the fact that his wife at the time, I'm hopefully still married. Her name was Kristen Babb. She was a synchronized swimmer, and what was the Olympics?
Was she going against Carolyn Waldo?
It was she was in a duet. I don't remember who her partner was. Yeah. Anyway, they ended up getting the gold medal through a scoring error ahead of the two. Was it Sylvie Frechette, the Canadian, synchronized swimmer?
Yeah,
the duo. And it took years and years and years and years and years of litigation before, at long last, and I don't know whoever signs off on it, the IOC or whatever, the Canadians eventually were also awarded the gold medal because I believe it was a computer error. But anyway, that was Ed Sprague's wife.
Okay, so that would have been 92 in Barcelona?
I don't know if it was the same time frame. I'm not sure.
Yeah, 88 was Carolyn Waldo. Yeah,
might have been 96 for all I know. But all I know is that Ed Sprague was married, coincidentally enough, to that. So there's a kind of a Canadian angle to all of that. And that is the rest of the story, as they like to say. All right, 7:57, we'll take a break. We'll get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. Then, as mentioned, we'll get Pierre McGuire in to break down the Evgeny Dadonov signing by the Sens. We'll find out all about the player, what it means for the Sens, what it means for the depth chart going forward. So we'll look to get some insight from Pierre McGuire and all the other hockey signings, coupled by the Rangers, who's left on the free agent pile, and anything else from the hockey world. We'll chat about with Pierre McGuire when we return, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.